better answer this. Probably the wife. He laughed nervously, covered the microphone with one hand, and turned away to take the call. Stark listened and didn't make a sound for probably 30 seconds. It was very awkward. When he turned back around, his eyes were very wide.
"Well, let's see. Important business. You'll have to excuse me for a moment."
He took a few halting steps, realized he should probably say something else, and came back to the microphone.
"I'll be right back. There is nothing to be concerned about. Please remain seated."
And then the director of the MCB fled the podium. The audience murmur evolved into the suspicious muttering of several hundred hunters. The final government man on the stage looked around, realized he was all alone, then got up and hurried after his boss. A minute passed, but no one came out to fill the void. It was the middle of the keynote address, and the spotlight was completely empty. Now we knew something really interesting had happened.
"Bring out the dancing girls!"
one of the Australians shouted. There was general nervous laughter. My phone vibrated. I pulled it out, expecting a text from one of my teammates. Hopefully someone had been able to overhear one of the MCB and had an idea what was going on. But the number was listed as unknown. "Would you like to know what is going on? Meet in room 212. You have 5 minutes." That seemed odd, but it wasn't until I looked up that I realized the really weird part. There were about 50 other hunters scattered across the room reading their phones, too. I recognized most of them as team leaders or managers from the various companies. Van Zant, who was standing only a few feet away, showed me his phone. We had all received the same message. Chapter 5.
"You think this is a trap?"
Van Zant asked as we got on the escalator. He glanced back at the crowd behind us.
"We're about to put the world's most experienced hunters in one room."
"That's whatever room I'm in, John,"
Earl Harbinger retorted.
"I'm just saying it's a tempting target.
If it's a trap, it's got to be one of the most convoluted things I've ever heard of. You think we're going to open the door and get pounced on by Shuggoths?"
"Shuggoths don't really pounce," I said. "It's more of a squishy, lumbering motion." Earl had briefed Van Zant and the other team leaders about the pattern we'd discovered earlier.
"If this is an invasion, now would be a really convenient time to eliminate a shitload of the opposition's brain power in one move."
Earl stroked his chin thoughtfully.
"If that was the case, it'd be smarter to blow the whole hotel up. Get us all."
He looked down the escalator. Since we'd been toward the back, we'd gotten out first. Just from our company, I could see Julie, Cody, Paxton, Eddings, and Priest. That was a big chunk of MHI's leadership. In addition, I recognized many familiar faces from today's schmoozing, including owners and commanders from most of the different companies. Everybody wanted a piece of this puzzle. Say what you will about hunters, we were a curious bunch.
"You got a point. I was a soldier, Earl. I still try to think like one. If we'd caught this many Taliban honchos in one place, I'd have dropped a mortar round on it faster than you could blink. Assuming I could actually get permission, of course." "Fair enough. Split off at the top. Stop every other one of our people. Hang back just in case."
"Roger that,"
Van Zant nodded.
"We're the cavalry."
Earl leaned in and lowered his voice.
"Especially stop Julie. Tell her it's my orders."
"Why?" I asked. "She's not going to like getting left out."
"Julie stays outside. If it is a trap, I'm almost indestructible, and you're replaceable. If MHI lost her, we'd be out of business in no time. She's the only one of us that can negotiate a contract worth a damn."
"Sure, a chivalrous husband would have stuck up for his wife, but life's too short to pick a fight with Earl Harbinger.
Julie only gets the best contracts because she's cute,
Van Zant said as we reached the top.
The rest of us are a homely bunch.
He stepped off to the side and had disappeared into the casino's crowds within seconds. It is easy to be inconspicuous when you're short. Room 212 had been one of the panel rooms earlier. The long table in front had been removed, and someone had rolled in a television. The chairs were still in neat rows, with a single sheet of paper neatly folded in the center of each one. I picked one up. The photocopy had only a few lines on it. The number 10 million, a phone number, and a bunch of numbers and letters.
Coordinates, Earl looked over my shoulder. To the northeast of here.
He was really good. That's what I thought, I lied. It wasn't that big of a room, and our competitors' leadership filled it quickly. Many of them appeared nervous. A few of the younger ones were trying to play it cool as they patted their sides to make sure their guns were still there. Most seemed curious. The older and more experienced hunters looked annoyed, having gotten tired of playing games a long time ago. The big pole from White Eagles squished in next to me. He was wearing way too much cologne. Many hunters remained standing, and a few of our guys stood right next to the door. The TV came on by itself, displaying a close-up of a deathly pale, very thin, totally bald man wearing persimmon-colored sunglasses and a white dress shirt that was nearly the same color as his skin.
"Good evening, monster hunters. Welcome to ICMIP."
Earl tensed so violently that my chair shook. I looked over to see that my boss's teeth were clenched, his lips pulled back in a snarl of hatred.
"I am Mr. Stricken," the TV said.
"You albino motherfucker,"
Earl growled. Stricken smiled.
"Pleasure to see you too, Mr. Harbinger."
That confirmed a few things. Stricken was on a live feed, we were on camera, and they knew each other. The sunglasses swiveled to the side as Stricken studied something.
"Before I continue, please shut off all your electronics and recording devices." "Yes. Third row, Ms. Kim. Shut it off temporarily or I shut you off permanently. If I see so much as an electrical blip in that room, it'll put me in a really foul mood. And please, close the door."
Stricken appeared to be watching another screen.
"Were you born in a barn? Shut it or this meeting is adjourned."
I turned to look. Cody was closest. Our New Mexico team lead hesitated. He was an old friend of my father, the man that had saved my brother's fingers, and one of our wiser, more experienced, and cautious men.
"This isn't a trick. If I wanted you dead, I would have poisoned your breakfast,"
Stricken said as he looked to the other side and read something.
"Which was a jalapeno omelet at Denny's at 6:45 this morning. Well, you're an early riser, Mr. Cody. Now close the door. I will not tell you again."
"Do it,"
Earl ordered. Cody pulled the doors closed.
"Thank you."
Stricken launched right into his message.
"At 1200 hours today, there was a monster-related event in a small town in northeastern Nevada. Due to the isolated nature of the location, law enforcement officials didn't discover the aftermath until a few hours ago. The scene had been contained, but the MCB was only recently made aware and has gone on full alert."
So that was what had interrupted Stark's speech.
"How bad?"
a man that looked suspiciously like Buddy Holly asked.
10 confirmed dead, 15 missing, Mr.—"
Stricken's head shifted to the other side as he studied a different monitor.
"Wilder, Team Talon. That's a clever acronym. Allow me to clarify, Mr. Wilder. It was more of a truck stop with some trailers around it than an actual town, but it's gone now. Those not ripped limb from limb vanished without a trace. We're not sure exactly how many, because the containment team is still finding pieces and trying to figure out which pieces go in which body bag. Do not interrupt me again.
A young man sitting a few rows ahead of me stood up.
Who are you?
Stricken waited a moment for the information to load.
Pierre Darnay. I knew your father. You take directions as well as he does, as in not at all. What part of don't interrupt me did you fail to grasp? I know there's a language barrier here, and English is your third language, but I'm about to offer you a very lucrative business proposal, so you can either sit your ass down or get the hell out of my meeting and wait for the official MCB press release.
Darnay reluctantly returned to his chair.
I represent a special multi-agency task force within the United States government.
Earl snorted.
We would like this particular issue dealt with as quickly and quietly as possible. The provisional puff bounty for this particular one-of-a-kind entity is listed as the first line on the sheet left on your chair.
I looked down at the $10 million and gave a low whistle.
For our foreign friends in the audience, those are American dollars, which must come as a letdown to those of you still collecting bounties in pounds, but at least they're not pesos. If you go to the Puff website, you'll see that this new bounty was posted in the last 15 minutes, with all of the applicable information to be filled in later.
The big Pole leaned across me to ask Earl,
"Is he telling truth?"
"He's from the government, all right,"
Earl said, which didn't really answer the question.
Some of you may be wondering if this is legitimate. Understandable. When this meeting is over, I'd like everyone present to check their personal bank account. A good faith payment of $10,000 has been placed into each to compensate you for your time. Think of it like a gift basket, only without the mixed nuts. But more importantly, you will be able to confirm that the money was wired there by the United States Treasury's Perpetual Unearthly Forces Fund. That should confirm I am who I say I am.
He hadn't really said who he was at all, but if this Stricken could get the Puff to move that quick, the dude had some pull. Getting them to process something as simple as a zombie kill required processing reams of paperwork.
More importantly, my task force has oversight over the requests for proposals on several new, very lucrative U.S. government contracts. You heard the new MCB director. I'm talking about several worldwide markets, too. Whichever company manages to complete this particular assignment will, let's be honest, win many of these contracts.
That caused a stir. Big government monster contracts were always worth a fortune, with a company being paid merely to be on call in case something happened at a certain facility, which rarely did. For example, MHI had a contract with the Department of Energy for a few of their sites, including one contract at Los Alamos that dated back to the 40s, interrupted only while we'd been shut down. To any hunting company, contracts like that were an endless cash dispenser, and when they did come up, the competition was fierce. Being the accountant that I am, I turned to Earl excitedly. We were talking about astronomical sums of money, but the look in his eye told me that none of that sounded in the least bit appealing to him.
"What is the monster?"
the German Lindemann asked. Stricken looked to his monitor.
"I will save you the time, Mr. Stricken. Klaus Lindemann, Grimm Berlin. We get the point. You are well informed. I, too, enjoy being informed. So please, do tell us what is the nature of this creature."
Stricken smiled, and there was something inherently wrong about that expression. like the muscles of his gaunt face weren't used to making friendly shapes.
"Your reputation precedes you, Mr. Lindemann. The threat is of an unknown type and number. There are no witnesses. The only intelligence we have is where it last struck, the coordinates of which are on your sheet."
The German spoke for all of us. "It would seem that if the type is unknown, then this bounty seems suspiciously excessive. Normally such a payment is reserved for the most lethal of beings." Stricken's smile vanished as quickly as it had appeared.
"Like I said, your reputation precedes you. So full of annoying questions. Participate or not. Your decision.
The rules of the contest are as follows. Whoever kills this thing first collects the money, wins a bunch of contracts, and gets to brag that they're the best.
I want it dead, and I want it dead now. I do not give a shit how you do it as long as it gets done fast. The rest of you can cry about it to each other in the hotel bar later. When it's dead, call the provided phone number, and everything will be arranged."
"This is not fair," shouted one of the Europeans. "We were not allowed to bring most of our equipment into the country."
This time Stricken didn't even bother to look up the man's name. He pointed at himself.
"Does this look like the face of a man who gives a flying fuck about the concept of fair? Improvise, asshole. The world's biggest arms expo is being held down the street. He'll think of something. What the hell are you waiting for? The clock is ticking."
The hunters looked at each other, confused.
"What's wrong with you? It's a race. Act like it,"
Stricken shouted.
"Go!"
Uneasy, several hunters rose. The early standers sized each other up, wheels turning. Because no matter who you were, $10 million was a lot of money, and to some of these smaller companies, a single decent contract could guarantee their future. And so the rush began. Several of the hunters went for the exit at the same time in a big, ungainly clump.